After serving 6 years and 62 days in Downing Street, David Cameron will formally resign as Prime Minister today.
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome David Cameron.
A modern, compassionate conservatism is right for our times, right for this new generation, right for our party and right for our country.
Today we published our manifesto. Our vision is for millions of us to play our part in making our country better, to create the big society.
Her Majesty the Queen has asked me to form a new government, and I have accepted.
Prime Minister, do you now regret when once asked what your favourite joke was, you replied, Nick Clegg? And Deputy Prime Minister, what do you think of that?
I'm back.
The eyes to the right, 400. The nose to the left, 175.
Don't stop gay people getting married. Allow them to do that, and society will be stronger as a result. So I respect the opinions of others, but this is a good step forward for our country, and I'm proud that this government's taking it.
Number five.
Radiohead's one of my favourite bands, and Fake Plastic Trees is a beautiful song.
If you are completely fried and exhausted and have no time for your family and never go for a jog or play a game of tennis or whatever, if you never do those things, you'll get into a situation where you'll make very bad judgments because you'll be exhausted and stressed and all the rest of it.
All right.
So do I try and live some sort of normal life at the same time? Yes, and I don't apologise.
The nose to the left, 285. So the nose have it, the nose have it. Unlock!
It is clear to me that the British Parliament, reflecting the views of the British people, does not want to see British military action. I get that, and the government will act accordingly.
Yeah. Oh, and get in the middle. Come on, Chad, back and face.
The third term is not something I'm contemplating. Terms are like shredded wheat. Two are wonderful, three might just be too many.
I've just been to see Her Majesty the Queen, and I will now form a majority Conservative government.
So Big Ben has struck 10 o'clock, and we can now start trying to discover which side thinks has carried the day.
But a senior figure in the Labour Party has just contacted me to say that they believe that Leave is actually going to win.
I've said before that Britain can survive outside the European Union, and indeed that we could find a way. Now the decision has been made to leave, we need to find the best way. And I will do everything I can to help. I love this country and I feel honoured to have served it.
So out with the old and in with the new. Today, Mr Cameron will take part in his last Prime Minister's questions before travelling to Buckingham Palace to tender his resignation. By this evening, Theresa May will be settling into her new home at number 10. Mark Durkin is the Foyle MP and Gregory Campbell is the MP for East Londonderry. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning.
So, first of all, to you, Mr Campbell, was he a good Prime Minister?
No, I think the jury's probably out that these things are normally assessed in the longer term. So, I suspect he always had, I think it was an unfair disadvantage, but I think his Eton background worked against him because most working people distrusted someone with that background and thought it was going to be difficult for them to adapt to the lives of ordinary working people. So that was probably a bit unfair, but nonetheless, it did work against him. I think it's going to be a while before we can assess his long-term impact on the UK as a whole.
And Mark Durkin, what do you think? What stands out to you about David Cameron's time in power?
Well, I think at a local level, we have to acknowledge his response to the Savile report was very, very strong, very clear. And indeed, in parliamentary terms, I know that was the first time a lot of people on the Labour side actually were prepared to call him and talk about him as Prime Minister as such, because up until that, he was still just Cameron, even though he was in office for a number of weeks. He also did some positives, obviously, the whole move around equal marriage. He also brought forward positive measures like the modern slavery bill that was nowhere in anybody's manifesto when he was persuaded by ideas and by lobbies that came forward in Parliament. So he could be positive, but also He presided over welfare reform in a way that was very harsh, very cruel. He presided over an austerity agenda. And even when he came forward with what appeared to be positive measures in relation to changing financial services and banking reform, again, he and George Osborne pulled punches on what needed to be done. And similarly, when he took up the very positive international issues around corruption and things like that, again, he ended up pulling punches and watering down his position.
Yes, but his stance on welfare reform was such a difficult time for Stormont, a sticking point almost for Stormont.
Yes, it became that, and you had the bizarre situation of a party like the DUP saying they were opposing welfare reform in Westminster, they were opposing parts of it, not all of it, and then voting for it in Stormont. So it became more politically complicated because of the differing positions of different parties. But the underlying position is not so much that it was a problem for Stormont. The underlying position is that he and George Osborne and Ian Duncan Smith took a wrong course in relation to a number of key issues around welfare reform, such as refusing, for instance, countenance that anybody could get a DLA or the replacement of DLA PIP on a long-term basis, that you couldn't even say that someone who was missing all four limbs, who has chronic conditions, they rejected amendments that would say that people like that could be awarded the benefit for life. So it was a very harsh and ideologically fixed position to be taking, and okay, unlike the position he took on other things where
Mr. Campbell, what do you think his record will be in Northern Ireland?
Well, I think the whole issue of the austerity budget and successive budgets beyond that were a difficult one. I think our position was a pragmatic one, to oppose it emphatically where we could. But once the reality was there was no point trying to avoid it. We had to grasp that. Mm-hmm. But he did have a difficulty in trying to persuade him of the need to do these things on a much more pragmatic basis and trying to bring the country with him. I think he was a conservative, not just in the old-fashioned sense, but I think he didn't quite get the working-class mentality, which I think Theresa May will need to get quite quickly. The Northern Ireland concept, I think intrinsically he was a unionist. I don't think there's any doubt about that. But he certainly, it will be a long time, I think, before the historians will accurately assess his contribution, not just Northern Ireland, but the UK as a whole.
Do you think he was slightly more removed from politics and affairs here in Northern Ireland than his predecessor, Tony Blair, perhaps?
No, I think his position was slightly more nuanced and different. I think what he wanted to do in Northern Ireland, he wanted to keep involved, he wanted to keep informed, but he didn't want the sort of day-to-day management style that Blair had, because I think he thought that if he did that, there would be very little attempt locally in Northern Ireland for people to say, right, we're going to have our hands on the tiller and we're not going to involve the Prime Minister unless it's absolutely essential. I think on most occasions, that was the right call to make. But it did give an impression of a more remoteness in terms of his premiership.
And do you agree, Mark Durkin?
Well, I think his own point was that, and he would have said it to me personally, was he didn't want to be any more hands-on involved in relation to matters in Northern Ireland than he was in terms of Scotland or Wales, that he regarded that as being a wrong signal, as being a signal that somehow Northern Ireland was in a crisis or was on a more critical list or whatever. So that was part of his style. He was also someone who did delegate to his own ministers. He didn't intervene and override his own ministers in the way that Tony Blair or Gordon Brown would have done. That was maybe a style that was interpreted by many people in Northern Ireland as being aloofness or whatever, but it partly was his prime ministerial style. He allowed ministers get on with it. He was also allowing devolution get on with it. So that was his approach. The problem, of course, with his premiership is his complete misadventure in relation to the EU referendum, one committing to call it by a fixed date and then not even waiting to that date to call it, not rolling the pitch properly, going ahead on the basis of assumptions and not listening to the advice that he didn't have the pitch rolled properly either in Europe or at home.
Of course, one thing that will stand out to people here is his apology on Savile and describing the actions of soldiers on Bloody Sunday as unjustified and unjustifiable. That surely will stand out to people here. How significant was that?
Well, absolutely significant. I mean, he was only in office a matter of weeks. He had told me just over a week before it, whenever he didn't know what was in the Savile report, I didn't know, nobody else. He said that he told me he would say what needed to be said, and that he would say it in ways that he hoped that people would appreciate that it was sincere. And the fact is, he did. And it wasn't just the strength of his statement. Mm-hmm. If you actually look at the way in which he answered the questions that he took for an hour or more afterwards, again, he was very focused and consistent, and no matter what question was raised, he kept coming back to that salient point. He didn't at any point try to deviate or avoid from that basic conclusion. And I think that was powerful in Derry. It also, as I said earlier, did change how he was seen and assessed by many people in the House of Commons. He became Prime Minister that day in the eyes of many.
OK, well, we're going to finish up shortly, gentlemen, with how we started. It's out with the old and in with the new. Gregory Campbell, Theresa May takes over. How do you feel about working with her?
Well, again, I think that we're going to be talking about a female Prime Minister this time who's, I think, will be viewed quite different to the first female Prime Minister, Margaret Thatcher. But in terms of comparisons with David Cameron, I think there is, she does come across to ordinary people and to backbench MPs as slightly aloof, a little bit cold. I would suspect within a few days, her advisors will be saying that she needs to try and shed that image, and you know, she does need to try and warm to not just to backbenchers but to the country. So we shall see. She's certainly a very hard-working, quite effective MP, and I know the jury's out as well on her tenure as Home Office Minister. But let her get her feet under the table, as it were, and we'll see what the first few weeks, especially over the summer recess, bring in terms of assessing how her premiership's going to work.
And Mark Durkin, no doubt she has some challenges ahead, doesn't she?
She clearly does. Huge challenges. Not just in terms of the Brexit negotiations, but on many other fronts as well. She's someone who is actually a good parliamentarian. I suppose it's hard to show yourself warm and cuddly when you're Home Secretary for 6 years, but the fact is, as Home Secretary, she was responsible for helping to steer through the modern slavery bill along with her colleagues. She did show some other sides of herself in that, and she did listen to some of the cases that were made in Parliament for that legislation to be a lot stronger. I could see, I was on the Bill Committee for that, and I saw where the arguments got through and where the changes came, and some of it was in response to, was because of her listening to points in the Chamber. So hopefully she keeps listening as Prime Minister, but she has some fixed views on other matters.